So what is said in Celsus is false. Namely, what could one call more divine than foreknowing and foretelling future things? And it is also false that many of the animals lay claim to a divine understanding, for none of the irrational creatures has any understanding of God. It is also false that the irrational animals are nearer to converse with the divine, since even among human beings, those who are still base, however far they may advance, are far from converse with the divine. So it is only those who are truly wise and unfeignedly pious who are nearer to converse with the divine, such as our prophets and Moses are. To him, on account of his great purity, the word bore witness when it said, "Moses alone shall draw near to God, but the rest shall not draw near." How is it not impious for the very man who accuses us of impiety to say that the irrational animals are not only wiser than human nature, but also more beloved of God? And who would not be repelled on hearing a man say that the serpent and the fox and the wolf and the eagle and the hawk are more beloved of God than human nature? It follows for him to say that, if these animals are more beloved of God than human beings, then clearly Pharisees, Pythagoras, Plato, Socrates, and the theologians he praised shortly before are also less beloved of God than these animals. And one might well pray for him, saying, if these animals are indeed more beloved of God than human beings, then may you come to share in their favor with God and grow to resemble those among your contemporaries who stand higher still in God's regard. And let him not suppose that this is a curse, for who would not pray to become altogether like those whom he believes to be more beloved of God, so that he too might become beloved of God as they are? Wishing the converse of the irrational animals to be more sacred than ours, Celsus does not entrust this account to just anyone, but to the intelligent. And the truly intelligent are, in reality, the virtuous, for no base person is intelligent. He speaks then in this manner. The intelligent among human beings say that there is also converse with those creatures, clearly more sacred than ours, and that they themselves somehow recognize what is said and show by their deeds that they are not ignorant of it, whenever, after foretelling that the bird said they would go somewhere and do this or that, they show them, having gone there, doing what they had already foretold. In truth, however, no intelligent person has recorded any such thing, and no wise person has said that the converse of irrational animals is more sacred than that of human beings. But if we examine the matter to test the consistency of Celsus's argument, it is clear that the conversations of irrational animals are more sacred than the dignified discourses of Socrates, Plato, Pythagoras, Pharisees, and the philosophers. This is on its face not only absurd, but utterly out of place. But even if we were to grant that some people, from the meaningless sound of birds, have learned that the birds are going off somewhere and will do this or that, and that this foretells something, we will say that this too has been made known to human beings by the demons symbolically, with a view to deceiving humanity and dragging its mind down from heaven and God to earth and to things still lower. I do not know how Celsus also came to hear of an oath of elephants, and that these creatures are more faithful toward the divine than we are and have knowledge of God. For I myself know many marvelous things reported about the nature of this animal and about its gentleness, but I am not aware that any oath of elephants has been spoken of by anyone, unless perhaps he has given the name of oath-keeping to the gentleness they show and to the kind of agreement they seem to form with human beings once tamed, whereby they are said to keep faith with them. But this too is false. For even if rarely, it is nonetheless recorded that after their apparent gentleness elephants have turned savage against men and committed murders, and for this reason have been condemned to be killed as no longer useful. Since after this he goes on, as he supposes, to make the case for storks being holier than mankind, drawing on what is reported about this creature, that it returns the care given it and brings food to its parents in return. It must be said that storks do this not from any reasoned understanding of duty, nor from calculation, but from nature that formed them wishing to set forth in an irrational animal. An example capable of putting human beings to shame regarding the repayment of gratitude to their parents. But if Celsus knew how much it differs to do these things by reason from doing them irrationally, and by mere natural instinct, he would not have called storks more pious than human beings. Further, Celsus, as though standing up for the piety of irrational animals, brings forward the Arabian creature, the phoenix, which after many years visits Egypt bearing its dead father, wrapped inside a globe of myrrh, and sets it down where the sanctuary of the sun stands. This too has been recorded, but it is possible, if indeed it is true, that this very thing is also natural, since divine providence has been generous enough to display to human beings, even in the differences among animals, the variety of the world's constitution extending even to the birds, and it has caused to exist a certain only begotten creature, so that this too might bring about wonder not at the animal, but at the one who made it. Since then, upon all this Celsus adds the statement, not all things then have been made for man, any more than for lion or eagle or dolphin, but so that this world, as the complete and perfect work of God, might come to be out of all things together. For this reason, all things have been measured out, not in relation to one another, but, except as incidental, in relation to the whole. And God cares for the whole, and providence never abandons it, nor does it grow worse. God does not turn back to himself over time, nor does he grow angry for the sake of human beings, any more than for monkeys or mice, nor does he threaten these creatures, each of which has received its own allotted portion in turn. Come, let us answer this, even if briefly. I think I have shown from what has already been said how all things have been made for the sake of man and of every rational being. For it is chiefly on account of the rational living being that all things have been fashioned. Let Celsus then say that this is not so for man, any more than for the lion or the other creatures he names. But we will say, the Creator did not make these things for the lion, nor for the eagle, nor for the dolphin, but everything was made for the sake of the rational living being, and so that this world, as being a work of God, might become whole and complete out of all its parts. For to this one must give assent, as a claim well stated. And God cares not, as Celsus supposes, for the whole alone, but beyond the whole, especially for every rational being. And providence will never abandon the whole, for it administers it, even if some part of the whole grows worse because the rational part in it sins, so as to purge that part, and in time, turn the whole back to himself. But he is not angry for the sake of monkeys, or of mice. Rather, upon human beings, since they have transgressed the natural starting points given them, he brings judgment and punishment, and he threatens them through the prophets and through the Savior who came to dwell among the whole human race, so that through this threat those who listen might be turned back, while those who disregard the words that call them to turn might pay the penalties they deserve, penalties which it is fitting for God to impose according to his own will, for the benefit of the whole, upon those who need such demanding care and correction. But since the fourth volume has now reached an adequate length, let us bring our discussion to a close at this point. And may it be granted by God, through his Son, who is himself God, the Word and wisdom, truth and righteousness, and everything else the sacred scriptures call him when they speak theologically of him, that we may also begin the fifth volume for the benefit of those who will read it, and bring that one too to a good conclusion, together with the coming of his word into our soul.